Very warm welcome to everyone into this online Dharma Hall session. It's very nice to be here, very nice to see you. So just take a moment or two, if we didn't already, just settling in, relaxing, resting into and arriving fully. So sometimes with these sessions, it's something we've been anticipating and planning for and having time to step into, and sometimes we've just rushed in to get in on time, and yeah. Either way, it's often quite worthwhile to have a bit of arriving, intentional arriving. So as I say, I hope you're doing well and you're familiar with this kind of space, and it's been a while of these online Dharma Halls happening that, you know, in the beginning used to be this old period of this is Zoom and click this button here to do this and that. But there's still one thing that I need often reminding about, is that you can turn off your self-view, that thing of yourself peeking back at you. I think it's a really helpful feature, kind of just to check in. It's like, okay, am I in the frame, or have I got something on, you know, stuck on me that, you know, I didn't realize, and like a mirror can do, but it can be a bit of a thing if we, you know, went to every meet up in person and we had a little mirror sitting in front of us all of the time so that we could just check in how we're looking. It can be quite a distraction. So feel free, if you want, you know, turning that off. You usually find it somewhere on the screen, and sometimes it's helpful to have it there. But also in terms of our exchange here, you know, feel free also to have your video off entirely if you wish, if that's how you feel more comfortable. But if you have your video on and you or others have their video on, we can just take a little moment just to kind of take in the community here. And community is a big part of why we offer these, is to give us a sense of togetherness, connection, and all of that that's there for us. So, yeah, if you're enjoying that sense of each other, that sense of community, another way that we can amplify that a little bit is actually to use the chat. If anyone's happy to, feel free to mention where you are. And as you do that, you might also want to mention how it is where you are. And that can include how you are, where you are. So I'll mention for myself that I'm tuning in from Dorset in the southwest of the UK on what's been a very kind of sunny, springy kind of day. And moving about within that, with also thoughts about dear friends in Palestine and all that's going on there. So always a mixed situation of locations, as I'm sure it is for many of us. So as those flow in, it's always delightful to see and to open out that sense of community spread around, and it's quite a diverse number of places. Let's let a few more flow in. We have time with us. And it's looking a bit sunny. It's the general outlook for the community. As those also flow in, I'd like to mention something that I think is a really important part of our practice, which is, what are we here to do? Are we here for ourselves? You know, a bit of calming, a bit of peacefulness, a bit of inner tranquility, or other qualities of awakening? Are we here for other beings? beings in the world? Are we here to cultivate something or put something down? Yeah. like the putting down of luggage, kind of putting down. So, you know, one of the ways I like to say that is if you imagined, and you can really let your imagination run wild here, really, if you could bring anything into being, whether it's in your heart, in your mind, in the world, in your connection to others, what would that be? What do you wish to see? What would feel inspiring or beautiful to see come through? And just sitting and doing that once in a while is a beautiful kind of meditation. Yeah, it has multiple benefits for us, just to remember, to align, to recall. It has a lot of benefits also if anyone's happy to share them again with the community. So we have a sense of our geographical space, but maybe we also have a sense of our kind of direction of travel, the goal that we're seeking, what we wish to see more of. And yeah, if anyone wishes to share that, so let's use the chat again, just to kind of give a time for all of them to flow through and also for them to resonate, and we can look back on them as we tune into them again and again as a part of our practice. So yeah, feeling of gratitude. I'll name a few as they go through. Sense of love and belonging. To bring in some lightness. Unconditional love for all beings. All really beautiful sentiments that are flowing through here, and I think you can see for yourself any one of those could just be deeply reflected upon and tuned into. There can also be a sense of them, you know, kind of widening out, a deeper sense of connection and joy, friendliness, generosity, equanimity and ease, so yeah, really beautiful. Thanks for sharing those, and thank you for those who didn't write but no doubt had beautiful intentions, beautiful ideas coming into your hearts. So let's take that and just have a question. One of the first questions I like to ask in a meditation is, okay, that's my intention. I might go further and say, okay, so why do you want that? You know, sometimes I do that, but let's just say we're happy with that. That's what we're here for. What posture is going to most support that for you? So it could be standing, it could be reclining, it could be walking, it could be some form of sitting. What's going to support that for you? And feel free to be adventurous. I'll say a bit more about that later on, but for now, if you haven't practiced in any of those other shapes, you could try some of the meditation like that. And we'll take half an hour. It'll be a relatively quiet meditation. I'll say a few things just to help settle us in to start off with. See if we can cultivate somewhere towards that direction of our intentions. So we might find the breath, sensations, where would we wish to attend to the breath? Maybe that movement in the diaphragm, belly, lower belly, maybe in the chest or the upper back. Back of the throat or the warmth, the coolness of the nose. Perhaps it's not the breath or any other body sensation, which could also be where we attend. It might be the sounds in the sound sphere. We'll emphasize in the beginning just a sense of connection, becoming familiar. What we hear, what we sense, how it feels. Maybe at first just bringing in a sense of naivete, as if we've never really experienced this before. So it doesn't matter if you're miles away or if you're right on top of or right intimately connected with your meditation object. But finding it again, sense of interest, and really gently we start fading in just a little bit more of that intention. So if it was gratitude, just a little bit more of that, really, like you want to fade it in like music fading into a scene. It's very, very subtle, that ease, friendliness, gentleness, whatever that was. Just a few drops more of that in the moment. I'll make another small suggestion. Pick it up or leave it aside, your choice. Fade in a bit more of this quality, or kind of fade up. You might wish to take a period of maybe three breaths. subdivide the in-breath at a certain level, the out-breath already a little bit more, next in-breath, increase, feel that little kind of build, like a wave up through a few breaths. Almost release the intention, see, making that wake, that wave behind a boat, cruising with that. Maybe the mind follows the breath or the sound, or maybe not. So we're fading in the intention, fading up the intention. in this moment or last few moments? Do you feel present or not so much? Let's completely relax the critical mindset about that. It's more interesting or useful than judgment. And if you're present, have been quite present, is there a way to get even more into your own life, this experience? And if you haven't been so much present, or not present at the moment, where were you? Is it more the future, more the past? I'm just going to make an intuitive guess. Is it more that you're rushing away to that, like drawn to that? Is there a desire for that? Or is it more a sense of not having enough to really show up in this? A bit of a reluctance or a sense of there's not quite enough here. Sort of intuitively feels right. And then if it's a bit more energy, more interest, is there a sense of the capacity to brighten, sharpen the attention, to really ride a whole breath? It might be helped in the physicality, aligning, maybe leaning back or forwards, left or right, aligning the shoulders, the head. And if it's more, it's kind of darting about energy, it needs more soothing, maybe resting into that out-breath, as if we're grounding, discharging, softening the face. And see if we can meet this experience with some fading in intentionality. just coming into the last 5 minutes of practice, seeing if it's possible to almost non-critically, somewhat objectively, just notice how, or what actually, it's what's happening in this body, heart, mind. What patterns are playing out. Maybe we can imagine it's like we've just walked into a room, your awareness here, just walked into a room and just immediately just having a sense, what's the vibe here? What's the mind, heart, body, what are they saying? Is it a kind of greedy vibe? Is it wanting something, or is it aversive? I need to get rid of something, something that's not good enough. I'm just a bit confused, just a muddle of things. Misunderstandings, miscommunications. Something else. And again, for these last few minutes, we're just going to make an intuitive guess. What's needed? Is it friendliness, contentment, discipline, simplicity, or is it our intention, the intention we started with, vision? last few seconds, just releasing all effort and enjoying whatever you've cultivated. Appreciating your efforts. And appreciating the support of the wider community. And if you feel to, we can also wish out or bless outwards these gifts, that may they be for the benefit of others also. Letting them expand and radiate. Transition from the more stillness part of the practice into a bit more community again. You can continue radiating if you're enjoying that, or absorbing, whichever way you feel. Okay, so thank you for your practice. As with all things, there's so much we could say about those ways that we were playing with our experience and shaping it and recognizing it, and what was revealed in a more non-judgmental lens of perspective. I have a few ideas of things I'd like to touch into and open up, and anything else outside of that that you noticed or you're interested in, feel free to bring that in. So I'll share a little reflection, and then we'll have time for kind of more your reflections, your sharings, questions, comments, anything like that. Before we go into it, I will just mention the possibility of supporting these sessions. So they are freely offered, and what that means is we're very free if we're able to or wanting to, and both of those come together. It's possible for us to give support, financial support, as well as all other kinds of support to those who come here to teach, and also Guy House for putting these things together. It can then kind of sound like, well, we've given you something, what are you going to give us? Which isn't at all actually the sentiment of Dana, as I see it. And it would be an incredibly difficult thing to ask people to, you know, give something back in return. But I think that it's difficult also not to hear it that way. And I'll kind of come on to that a little bit later. We're conditioned, actually, to feel if someone's done something for us, we owe them one. And one of our cognitive biases, one of the ways in which we shape the world, is that we feel that we owe other people. We feel indebted. Yeah, it's a very interesting area that, you know, as you know, if someone does something nice for you, you kind of feel that that kindness needs to be repaid. But kindness is, can't be repaid. Yeah. It's just, it's a really absurd transactional way of looking at it. You know, kindness is an action that someone did because they wanted to be kind. Yeah, it just came through them. And what it should mean is that we recognize, that made them happy. I should do that. Yeah. And so the sense is not to pay back kindness, but to pay forwards kindness. We just look out into the world, see opportunities to be kind, and we go and do it. Yeah. So a lot of effort and energy and thought and care has gone into giving this to you. And you can use your effort and energy and care and thought to do something with it. Yeah. There's also the possibility to kind of recognize, yeah, there's kind of financial things going on. People who come here to teach, it's also sometimes a significant part of their livelihood. You know, the Gaia House runs only because, you know, bills are paid. So there is that sense of responsibility that we can take towards it. And of course, if nobody does that, then it'll stop functioning. So yeah, there's that kind of very clear invitation from that side. But yeah, it's definitely not to do with paying back. Yeah, it's something much bigger than that, something I think very, very radical and beautiful. And even if this were only a financial model, it would still be pretty amazing, you know, that it actually works this way. So you'll know familiar links. If you got here, then you probably can imagine there's a way back to the website where you came from, where you can revisit the support page from there, as many of you have done. And I'll also put in my website there, dependentorigination.org, where you can also offer support to me for the blah blah that I offer here, and may it be useful. Something I was thinking also about, this idea of paying back, it would mean that you actually knew what you had received. And I've certainly recognized over the years of these teachings, is that what they meant? I didn't pick that up at all in that right way. Or it continued to grow and develop and things like that. So it's kind of, hopefully it's bigger than what you thought it was. And they do continue to serve us, like gifts that keep on giving. Like if someone gives you a tree, a fruit tree to put in the soil, yeah. So hopefully it's a gift that leads onwards. All right. So yeah, I could and probably need to stop myself from going on about Dana and how amazing it is. But yeah, real honour to be able to offer this in this way, and that the whole of the organisation is standing in that stream as well. It really inspires me. So recently, I've found myself in a place where I've been thinking a lot about what are we doing? Like these organisations that are set up to share these teachings. Some of you will know there are these things called visions and missions that charitable organisations like Gaia House, or I have an organisation called Sangha Seva, Meditation in Action. And it's good for these organisations, for their health, to sometimes sit back and think, okay, what is our vision? Where are we heading? What kind of a future do we want to see? And I like that. I like thinking about that organisationally, and as you recognise, those who were here at the beginning and also who've been at the beginning of any of the sessions that I do, is I really like to ask that question. Like, what do you actually want? Yeah, where do you want to end up? What would you like to see? And I find it helpful also because, there's kind of like two main reasons. One is I think we actually get diverted away from those intentions. You know, it's like something that should be tattooed on the heart, to use the words of, forgotten his name. Who wrote the book, Tattoos on the Heart? Gregory, was it? It's gone out of my mind. A Catholic priest. Anyway. They should be tattooed on our hearts. That's the point. I wouldn't tattoo his name on my heart, but I do wish I had a better memory for those things. And it also actually helps us to widen our understanding. You know, it's like, how wide is that going? Is my path wide enough when I have to name it for myself? Does it actually, you know, resonate with me? So we should also have a vision. And from that vision, we actually establish our mission. Like, how are we going to practice? Our pathway, yeah, the way of the path needs to align with our goal of that kind of path destination, so that we head in that direction. Yeah, because we could get short-sighted, yeah, very narrow-minded about what we're here to do. Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm going along, and then I actually get pulled off track by, you know, someone explaining to me what these teachings are for. Oh, they're actually to develop, you know, jhana, these deep states of absorption. I say, oh, that sounds great, you know, and then off I go into there. And I'm in there, I'm working around in there, you know, developing all this kind of stuff. And I might forget, why did I start? Like, what was I trying to do? Oh, be a nicer person, or, you know, be kinder, whatever. And now I can actually pin my mind into these amazing, beautiful states. And if someone comes along and pulls me out of it, I get very irritable, you know, and say, what are you doing coming in here? You know, so it's like, well, that didn't actually serve my goal, perhaps. I'm just kind of using a cartoony thing. I don't think it's very likely that it would actually, you know, divert in that way. But it's just that it's important to actually know what it is that we're here for. I think as organizations, it's also really important that they know what they're here for. So if we said what it is, you know, what are these teachings and practices for? Yeah. So the Buddha was always very clear. They are for the ending of suffering. For the ending of suffering. Ending of dukkha. And you could translate dukkha in many different ways. And that's an interesting point. Because if that's possible, then we actually end up with multiple different paths. Somewhat distinct. Yeah. If it's suffering, if it's pain, if it's distress, if it's stress. You know, if it's agitation, if it's reactivity. Yeah. So different translations actually suggest different path goals and would also start to suggest different paths, slightly, yeah, pathways. Anyway, I would say it's all about actually liberating, and the Buddha also says this at times, liberating the heart and the mind from three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. Yeah, and creating the situation where others can step out of this. And that's actually, without knowing it, that's probably been at the heart of what I think a human life is actually for, not just meditation practice. For quite a long time, I was much more engaged with kind of anti-capitalism and you know, environmental care as a teenager, and kind of came towards meditation. Actually, didn't come towards meditation. Moved away from meditation. Kind of thought, no, that's not actually going to help, right? I want to live from love and kindness and care and considerateness and all this, and I haven't got time for what these meditators seem to be up to. Now I no longer hold that view, obviously, but I can see how someone like myself could actually look at what the meditation project seems to be within the framework of, like, it's just self-help kind of activity. Yeah, it's just people wanting to be more calm. For their own, have their own little bubble of calm while the ship goes down. Yeah, that's my, you know, negative way of framing it, right? But what I also reflected when I heard the teachings, and luckily I heard them from someone who was quite active, quite engaged and impassioned and kind of connected with me on that level, and then taught me meditation from that place, was it allowed me to reflect, what I've been finding it so hard to do is actually to uproot the greed, hatred, and delusion in my life. Yeah, just wanting them not to be there was not enough. I want to be loving and kind and compassionate, just as any morning we don't wake up and think, I think around 3:30 I'll have a very irritable mood and then I'll be snappy, and the people near me will just have to suffer that, and that's what I'm going to do, and then I'll make my excuses and leave. You know, it's like, no, we would never plan that, but we can't say that's not going to happen to us. Yeah, in the next week, am I going to be not at my best in some way? Yeah. So the question then becomes, why is it so hard? Why is it so hard to know I want to end greed, hatred, and delusion? Why can't we just decide to do that? It seems like a really childish question to ask, but, you know, it is quite an important one. And it's just rained really heavily here the last couple of days, and I always like to get outside once a day and have a little walk. We've got some rivers here. And so I was walking past this bulging stream, and I saw next to the stream the title of this session. And it said, "Beware strong currents." Beware strong currents. And I thought, that's what it is, isn't it? There's strong currents, the underlying currents of greed, hatred, and delusion. And be aware of them. That would be enough, yeah? It doesn't say, don't get in the river, you know, or don't come anywhere near this. But actually, beware, strong currents. Now, you might say, oh, I'm not going in there if there's strong currents. You know, but you could do other things in the course, you know, the surfers among us or, you know, adventurous ones or whatever might say, well, that sounds pretty good. It's like, well, you don't get strong currents everywhere. I'm going to get a bit of that, you know. But in this sense, we're actually looking at, okay, as a human being, I have strong currents and they really are strong. Yeah. If you think they're not strong, just try and stop them. Like tomorrow, no greed, no hatred, no delusion, no mistakes, no misunderstandings, pure, simple clarity, generosity all day long, and radiating loving kindness. Okay, it's only going to be 24 hours. No, strong currents, yeah? Despite really strong determination, clarity of purpose, seeing the incentive, like that would be a day of massive happiness. Very difficult. And if you pulled it off, you'd be what they call in Pali an arahant, yeah? For 24 hours, you did it. You were not affected by the strong current. So we have to own, okay, this is part of our pattern language. Yeah, I like this phrase, pattern language. What it means is we are part of a pattern. You know, you could say like a whirlpool in a river, yeah? It's like part of the current goes this way and it does this swirly bit and then it goes on. And we're like that swirly bit. It's just this pattern that's made up of strong currents, particular types and all that kind of thing. And it also relates to the Buddha's teaching, which is, doesn't say if the self exists or does not exist, but describes the self as activity, as karma. Yeah, getting to understand the karma. We move from a sense of essence, you know, that holds all the responsibility for all our good and our ill, to actually activity. Yeah, we relate to others also as their activity. Yeah, and that's actually true. We actually do relate to them that way. Yeah? We relate to those acts of kindness, those sensitive listening. That's what we respond to. That's what we see. And so we recognize patterns, pattern language of different beings, and we like to be with certain ones, we like not to be with other ones. Partly because of their pattern language, their way of coming through. Yeah. So the particular patterns that we want to pay attention to, the strong underlying currents, have a name in the teachings, in case you want to look it up. It's asava. And it's a strong A-R-sava. So A-S-A-V-A. And they're kind of the inflows, the outflows. It's not clear what's actually meant with that etymologically, if it's actually talking about what flows out of us, or also what flows into us. And I think that as we understand ourselves as human agents, let's say, activity beings, agents of activities, we are impacted by inputs, yeah, societal, familial, cultural, all of that. And we're also influenced by, you know, we influence through our outputs, how we speak, how we act, how we behave, how we listen, all of that, how we attend. So sometimes these are actually called karmic propensities, which sounds a little kind of complicated, but it's all those kind of underlying biases. The wonderful teacher, Adson Suchito, S-U-C-C-I-T-O, you know, speaks about them as these underlying biases, which to me sounds like, oh, they're just another layer of kind of cognitive bias. Yeah, there's numerous biases that we have to see in certain ways, to shape in certain ways, to conceive in certain ways. And that's what makes our thoughts, our emotions, our sensations, our responses, and all this. It's all conditioning, all this web and network of patterns. coming together. And yeah, so, you know, just what happens. It's just what happens. It's how it is, right? But it's not, that's not the end of the story. Yeah. Because the Buddha doesn't make this declaration of saying, you know, you're going to be swamped by greed, hatred and delusion for the rest of your life. I've worked it out and that's just the way it is. Right? There is actually a sense of agency there. There is a sense of being able to surf, to shape, to direct these currents and you know, work our way through these. So let's break it down, right? Because already this whole kind of sense are there, so there's karmic propensities and there's this and that. So what are they? What are the ones that particularly you want to look out for? Sometimes there's three, sometimes there's four. And I actually think the fourth is actually quite a useful one. So we will also do the four list today. You will not be surprised by the ones that are here. Yeah. So it's the tendency. Probably a good word. So karmic propensity, let's say it's a tendency. Now, we tend to do this. Human beings will tend to seek happiness or relief in sensual pleasures. Yeah. Of course, you don't, but you know, other humans probably do, don't they? Yeah. The second one is demanding for becoming something. Yeah. Wanting to be something, someone, and usually something special, yeah, that way. Wanting existence, some kind of, yeah, wanting to show up, wanting to be recognized. Yeah. Again, yeah, it's something that other people, we've seen other people do this, so it must be true. And then another is this tendency towards misapprehension, misunderstanding, ignorance, confusion, delusion, yeah. And all of these kind of come together to put us into a dukkha kind of state of heart and mind. You know, that can manifest as ill will and harmfulness, but it also, you know, certainly can manifest as trying to take more than we need, shoring up, you know, some kind of safety or something through that way. Okay. So typical tendencies, and we're not surprised to hear that being around these teachings long enough. The fourth one that sometimes is mentioned, sometimes isn't, kind of an attachment, a gripping onto, getting fixed or inflexible or limited views or perspectives on things. Yeah. So I think it's another really important one. Now, it's really good, in my experience, to define the problem quite clearly, you know, quite accurately. Because just by talking about it, just by describing it, we actually start to move towards solutions or possible solutions. Yeah, so it's like, oh, is it taking up, you know, inflexible views that leads to this kind of situation? Oh, right, actually. Well, so what view am I holding, and can I hold it more lightly and more flexibly? Yeah. So, am I actually demanding for happiness from things that can't present it? Yeah. Oh. Okay, yeah, of course I am. Oh, yeah, doing it again. Right, well, let's not do that. Let's take up a different way, route, yeah, different way around this. It's also helpful, I think, just to kind of be clear in defining the thing, because it actually makes it narrower and more precise in the same way as like getting to grips of like, what is it I'm actually here for? What's my intention? Where am I aligned? And not getting diverted off into projects and practices that don't necessarily serve me. But also, it's not like you have to get everything right. If you notice one of these things is most dominant, then we can actually really be able to play and to work our way through all of that. The other point with this in particular is that these asavas are existent until full awakening. So as I said, you know, if you manage to not have them for 24 hours, you'd be spending 24 hours as an arahant, a fully awakened, liberated human being. Yeah. So expect them. Yeah, that's the other side, is that expect them. Expect that to be dominating your experience. Yeah, even now, as you're thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to practice those. Is that actually, you know, is that, oh, and it'd be really good. It's like, you know, subtly, attachment to views, subtle attachments, sensual pleasures, wanting to become something, someone awake. Ooh, that would be me, you know. You know, so, yeah, okay, right. So they're going to be happy. So beware strong currents. Be aware. But awareness is not enough. I mean, it's not the end of it. So noticing is certainly a good step, but there's actually more. Yeah, noticing, relaxing, not identifying with them. They're a pattern language, not who you are. And there's stuff that we can do. Some of you might have joined me on it, but I ran a little course a while ago. I'd like to get it out in the open again, called Fulfilling Intentions. And one of its nice ways of practicing is, actually there's a lot of nice ways about it. We actually practice 3 times a day, and sometimes just as short as 5 minutes. But one of the ideas I had in the practice is expect hindrances. Yeah, that was point number one. And we actually use this acronym DRAGS. So, you know, see that it's possible to put the hindrances as DRAGS, DRAGS. So there could be dullness, restlessness, aversiveness, greediness, and or D was doubt, I think, and S was sluggishness or something like this, yeah. So, but you can play around with this, make acronyms out of stuff. But the main point is expect the hindrances, but who's here? Get to know them. Actually define them. Oh, there's a lot of greediness in me. Oh, surprisingly enough, there's also a lot of aversiveness today. Yeah, both together. Okay. Magical combination. Or what is it? Oh, it's actually a lot of restlessness. I'm very agitated. Worried, actually. It's more that. That's the first one. We define them, and then we actually start to defy them, yeah, undermine them, diminish them, turn them off, turn them down, and that's the practice, yeah. And what you'll realize through this is that there's a couple of really key features that come about when we practice in this way. One is honesty, and honesty is so important. It's that this is what is here. It's a truthfulness about our experience, and there's an integrity to that. Yeah. But again, we recognize this is a pattern language. It's not who I am, but this is what I've got to play with. That's the pattern that's playing out. And those actually lead into a confidence to play our part. Yeah. And that implies two confidences, actually. There's a self-confidence, like an assurance, inner assurance. I can do this. Or at least I can play a part, I can contribute. Yeah. And that's a really important thing that's developed in this practice, in this path. Yeah. And then the second part is actually a confidence in the teachings. At least in the part of the teachings of this is a dependently arising experience. Yeah. It's dependently arising this way. Dependent on these strong currents, but if I don't follow the strong currents, if I see them, I'm aware of them, and I move away from their tendency, then I'm confident in the dependent arising, dependent origination of this experience. And then I can be confident in the dependent fading of it. And that builds back into the self-confidence. Huh, I can do this. I'm not a master, I'm not an arahant, I'm not, you know, whatever, but I can play a part. Yeah. And those confidences, really, really important. Yeah. Yeah, and that's why we share these types of teachings. Yeah, they're not the bad news, strong currents, beware, but be aware they are there. Yeah, and if you miss them, well, it can get rocky. Okay, so yeah, I think that kind of brings to a fullness the reflections, and hope that feels like it also relates to what we were playing around with in the meditation. But if you have any questions about that, or, you know, also how we see these unfolding on the, you know, geopolitical level, which they certainly do as well, can take any reflections around that. But yeah, I think I'm going to pass over to you at this point to see if you have anything you'd like to bring in, and you can use the chat, you can unmute, whatever feels helpful. Yes, and thank you, Gregory Boyle. Amen. I missed it when you caught that one. Yeah. So if anyone hasn't read Tattoos on the Heart by Gregory Boyle, that comes as a recommended reading possibility. It's full of beautiful stories and wonderful work. So yeah, if there's anything at all, feel free to bring it in. It doesn't have to be clearly formulated or yes, please. Yeah. So if there's three, they relate to the projection that we can get happiness from sensual pleasures. Yeah. So I mean, oftentimes people would call it craving for sensual pleasures, but I think it's important to actually define it accurately. Right? It's actually the impression that we have that happiness is existent in things, and therefore we need to get those things to be happy. Okay. So that's how. So no, that's just my way of defining what craving for sensually pleasures is. So this would be exactly the same. As you rightly said, the first two asavas are actually the first two types of craving, tanha, demanding, that we have. So typically those are three, which is craving for sensual pleasures, craving for existence, and craving for non-existence. Okay? When we transfer that over to the asavas, we've actually lost the craving for non-existence. Yeah? And here we actually have a general ignorance or misunderstanding of things. Yeah? So that would be what we might call kind of fundamental delusion. Now, how we define fundamental delusion kind of varies upon different people. But you could say it's someone who has not been exposed to teachings of awakening, has not also gathered confidence in themselves that they can traverse along that path. So that kind of thing. So that would be the three asavas. When there are three, and as you rightly pointed out, two of them are from a kind of a breakdown of three types of craving. So craving for sensory pleasures, craving for existence, dropping non-existence and replacing that with avidya, fundamental delusion, ignorance. And then the third one would be craving for views, attachment to views. Yeah, beautiful. Yes, yeah, yeah. So I think you actually bring up a really interesting point. So one of the ways of kind of answering this question would be, how much of a Pali scholar do we need to be? Because it does happen that people will translate these words in ways that suit their own culture, their heart mind, and their pattern language, you know, their way of coming into being, all the currents that kind of led them to say, that's greed and that's greed. Greed or desire or anything like that isn't really a very good translation for tanha. Yeah. Like tanha, I think, for me, what works for me is it's a sense of demanding on things. Yeah. And the demandingness is the problem. Yeah. So if we look at it, it's not sensual pleasures that are the problem. It's the demanding of sensual pleasures to give me happiness, which they can't do. They can't do. There's no happiness in sensual pleasures. The happiness is in you, and the happiness actually comes from the satisfaction of no longer seeking for them and demanding for them. Because you don't demand for sensual pleasures when you're getting them. That's part of the happiness thing. So the way to happiness is actually in lessening the demand. Yeah? If you've got enough. Yeah? So first, are you well nourished? Are you housed? Are you other things? If you're not, well, keep demanding for stuff until you have your basic needs met. But once you have your basic needs met, stop demanding. Yeah? Because it's very unusual for systems to find themselves in equilibrium. So keeping on demanding makes kind of sense as an evolving being that's picked up pattern languages, asavas, which are going to continue to work even though they're no longer necessary. And we're saying, oh, it's no longer necessary, may I come stop doing that. Yeah. And then we have in the hindrances, we have this quality that's often kind of called desire or greediness. Yeah. And that's a very specific thing. That's an obscuration that's disturbing the clarity of your mind, your mindfulness and your heartfulness, to be able to see clearly your experience. And there we're actually saying, actually, that's an activity that's going on, a greediness or an aversiveness, which is just part of a pole of certainly of demandingness also, yeah? And if I can quieten those down by precisely getting to know, is this greediness or is this aversiveness in my heart mind? So I gave that example in the meditation, is like, imagine you're coming into a room. The room that you're coming into is your awareness. And there's a conversation going on in this room, and you want to get to know what's the vibe. Now, is it generally a greediness vibe or an aversive vibe? Like, are people in there plotting evil, you know, or are they plotting gain? You know, they're trying to get one over on life. And we notice in our awareness, it will be inclined one way or the other. We just want to come in, get a sense of the vibe. Is that a room I want to be in? No. Okay, well, get out of that room then. Yeah. Or diminish that quality. And what we can do as a practice is apply the antidotes to hindrances. That's why the hindrance teaching exists. The fullness of the hindrance teaching is like, well, if you have a lot of greediness, what do you need to do? Well, you need to cultivate contentment, perhaps, or generosity. Yeah? Because, okay, you're thinking about beautiful things, but don't try and get them, try and give them away. That kind of thing. If you're having a lot of aversiveness, well, you know, practice metta, loving kindness, appreciation. Are there other aspects of those people that we can respect and think? Or is there actually something that needs to be said? We can plan skillfully. How could we say what needs to be said in the way that they can hear it so that they can change? There's no point sitting here moaning about people. Yeah. We need to have some action going on there. Yeah. I think, no, that's fine. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I would say that's more or less correct. And I was thinking about something in relationship to this this kind of teaching model. I was remembering there's a teacher called who developed Insight Dialogue. So some of you might have heard about Insight Dialogue. And his name's Gregory Kramer. Another Gregory, Gregory Boyle. And so he has this lovely saying, which is all the teachings are practices. So it's a good framing to have because, so there's this hindrance teaching, but the real question is like, how do we practice that? And on a day-to-day basis, do we actually practice with it? Or do we just say, oh yeah, those things happen? Right, because an oh yeah, those things happen teaching isn't what the Buddha was doing, I don't think. So then it becomes this question, is that okay, so if there are hindrances, and if I'm not fully awake, there will be hindrances, or if there are asavas, and if I'm not fully awake, there will be asavas, then how do I practice with them? So first you've got to notice that they're there. You have to recognize that they're there. Yeah? And then which ones are there? And then how do I respond? So I think that's what the hindrance teaching is kind of saying. With that quality of tanha, of thirsting after, then, you know, we can take that as, okay, so that's what's there in the Four Noble Truths or something like this, you know, and it's like, here is a path that's stepwise to go from dukkha to the fading of dukkha to actually also the fading of experience and then the cultivation of a whole life path. But similarly, we could say, well, I reduce tanha by diminishing the hindrances. And it would be entirely true to say that. Yeah, that they would do that. But then what we also have to remember is that then they become more subtle. Yeah. Because we're fading them down, whittling them down in that way. The teachings overlap in numerous ways, and then there's places where it's really helpful to have those clear distinctions. But it does come down to this, you know, it really is just one teaching of the reduction of dukkha. And the Buddha said very clearly at one point, you wouldn't have dukkha if you didn't have tanha. So, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for your investigation. Does anyone else have any reflections or comments or anything else? Yes, please. Yeah. Hi. Yeah. So if I follow what you're saying is that you've kind of been practicing going through, you know, the development, cultivation of various things, explorations, or someone could also be in a state where they haven't been practicing very much of late or whatever. And then there could be a sense is that, oh, I should start paying attention more, that hindrances will be present, even if they're not evident, and they will be shaping my my view of myself, my view of the world, and all of this. So we could say practicing with the hindrances highlighted in our hearts and minds is a particular way of practicing, and we might want to do it with them very, very prominent. You know, what's here? What am I not noticing? It is here. Why am I not seeing it? What is it? Where is it? Oh, there it is. I've got a sense. It's greediness. Yes, that's what it is. And defining it and pinning it down. And then, okay, now I'm going to practice appreciation. Appreciation of what I've got. Because why am I greedy for more when there's enough here already of things that I could enjoy, that I have a sense of smell and I'm not appreciating it? So it could be that. There could also just be more like what I think you were saying, which is just a, I don't really know, but I think it might be that. Or very lightly practicing, and just see over time, is that helping with that reduction on that quality? Is that what kind of what you meant, like in a gentle way? Okay, so, I mean, I can say what I would do, what I do, you know, basically in relationship to that, is it's a thing I check when I start off practicing. Like, you know, if we were paying attention to the hindrances all the way through our meditation, I think that would be possibly encouraging the negativity bias that we already have of actually focusing in on the wrong thing. You know, there's this kind of state that people can go into of a jhana kind of state, and some descriptions of it say, and thinking stopped. And if you're hanging around looking for thoughts, has the thinking stopped yet? You know, you're obviously encouraging more thoughts. And in the same way, as if we're greedily trying to get rid of the greedy desires, you know, or we're being aversive about the aversive desire, hindrance that we're experiencing, then we're actually just reinforcing that. Whereas what I like to do is just start off, as the session begins, is like, okay, what hindrance is present? Because one of them's going to be present. And let's just check, is the practice that I've chosen to do going to support that? Now, I don't know until I've tried them all. Yeah, it might turn out, you know, aversiveness, anatta practice are a wonderful team, you know, a wonderful mixture. Anatta is very, very strong and powerful at getting rid of aversiveness. I end up at the end of that practice. Something that I've described before many times is I do what's called a victory lap, is you just check through the whole of the body, the being, the mind, the heart, the psyche. Ah, how's that now? Yes, much less hindrances. Good. Meditation was worth doing, wasn't it, Nathan? Yes. I'll see you in the next one, shall I? Yes, I'll be there. Good, good, good. All right, let's keep it going. All right? Because if we don't do that, we actually don't get to see that our practice works. And that doesn't reinforce that confidence building. Yeah. Self-confidence is kind of necessary. So the hindrances can be a way of having a metric of practices working. Yeah. Whereas if you said, no, I never pay attention to the hindrances, I would have to ask in my heart and mind, I might not ask it out loud, but I'd be like, so how do you know that practice works? Because you've got to measure it against something, or you just addicted to it, maybe, yeah, could happen. You know, it's various things we do in life because we just love doing it, and that can also be fun. But if you're interested in progress, you probably need to measure it against something, and the hindrances could be a good way of doing that. So yeah, don't make them the center, don't make them the thing you're paying attention to all the time, but notice at the beginning, notice at the end can be a really good way of including them. Yeah, thank you. Thank you everyone for coming along to this and being here with us together, and thank you to each and every one of you for your practice and your presence. And may we continue, and may all these unwholesome tendencies diminish and the beautiful ones come through.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.